on one of your charts, there was a memo to Prince Charles, and I wondered if you actually knew him or whether it was...
No, I knew.
You did know him.
I do know him. I still know
him. Oh, you know him?
He was
Yes.
Yeah, he was on the Secret Council 10, which was made up of the Rockefeller contingent, the American contingent, and then the City of London contingent represented by Prince Charles and his relatives. And then there's the European faction represented by Turn and Taxis. And then the Asian, but including Moscow, faction represented by the Romanovs. So there were four quadrants in the Secret Council 10 of these oligarchs. And the Romanov of the Asian contingent was not the Russian Romanov family, just the same name. So when I sent that memo to Prince Charles, which was the first one, June 4th, 1987, I always sent it on my father's birthday, June 4th, and the second one in Fatty Communion is June 4th, 1990. These two memos, the first one was done before I was chairman of the Secret Council 10, and the second was when I was chairman in 1990. They're both sort of mocking him. The first one sort of mocking him because I was aligned with the Rockefeller faction in North America. Some people know that I introduced Lady Diana to Prince Charles. I'm the one who arranged that wedding.
Well, I was wondering if you were a member of the royal family, you know, because I thought, well, Bob's mother's a mystery to me. I wonder if she's an English royal.
My mother was the spitting image of Queen Elizabeth. Even though
Heaven.
She was Anglo-Franco, you know, a mixture, because we were all in Paris. But she would watch the Queen's Address once TV and all that came in. She was born in 1887, and my father was born in 1882. So then little Prince Charles, I started to show him, and I thought, we're the real monarchists. I used to think... Mom, the real fucking queen and prince of this scene, and that goof Prince Charles and Queen Elizabeth just don't make it. That was the attitude I had when I grew up. I had thought my mother was pretty special. Now, if you listen to the economics thing I do, the oligarchs around the City of London were the only ones with any money in 1980-81 because the Rockefellers had blown their bank accounts, which was predicted by Cosmic Awareness in 68-69, because they had lent money all over the world. It was the American century, American empire. So the computer speeds made that awkward. So they were vulnerable economically, whereas the oligarchs never lent money. They only invested in things. So they're sitting pretty in the early 80s. So we arranged. We knew that Prince Charles would have to go around and start interacting with everybody. He was quite isolated in the 70s. But all of a sudden, he's visiting, you know, the White House and all this stuff around the world because he represents the oligarchic money that was going to be invested or loaned all over the place, but not loaned in the normal sense, but basically, what do you call it, injected into the economy. So he had to have a trophy wife while he socialized. So it was my task to find somebody. Even though I lived in Paris, I understood a British society pretty good, and... there were certain families that were eligible, and the Spencer family was eligible, and she was a simple girl. So I, representing my Secret Council 10, prior Scion, whatever, I personally called the Secret Council 10, but that wasn't the official name. I represented their wishes to find someone in England, and they gave me a list of three people, and one of them was Lady Diana. He already knew her a little bit, but we arranged for them to kind of start dating. And I think Prince Charles understood this. He knew what was coming. So that's why they had kind of a fake marriage.
Wow. Gosh.
So you're one of the first British people that ever heard this. I don't tell this. I don't have a British audience like you, you know. Through the years.
Well,
I've said this for years
staggering.
On my show. Yeah.
It's absolutely staggering. Hopefully no one would believe it, so it wouldn't matter if somebody in the audience was listening.
Well, I count on that, John. I've gotten away with a lot because nobody believes me, which is the best defense.
Yeah.
But once Ion showed up, got a little bit difficult to hide how amazing I was.
Yes, because Ion does spell it out about who it all boils down to. There's no escaping from it.
Yeah.
But honestly, Bob, this is just a sidebar from what we were talking about Africa, because it just means that, like Ion says, everything comes back to you, except I was thinking today, it can't really impact all the world, like Africa and Asia and, say, Russia, or, as much as it does the West, does it?
Well, on the Secret Council 10, we were global. We were called the solar government. We set up Echelon in 1960. That was using the satellite environment. We were sort of basically had the best access to it. Other than the high technocrats and the intelligence agencies, we worked on a global scale. That's the point why we're called a solar government, not a world government. We orbited. And, the Commonwealth was everywhere.
Absolutely.
The Asian Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Massive.
And then there's the deal, with Hong Kong was given back to the Chinese. That was a big lot of inside loopholes in that. The oligarchy gets into China that way. Luckily, the Android meme has diminished all that, which would be horrible for humans if we didn't have Ion's intervention. Basically, it was the, like McLuhan said, planet of the dead, surplus flesh, and people have basically lived like that for the last 30, 40 years. And no end in sight until our scene showed up.
I'd like to know what you thought of Margaret Mead.
Margaret Mead, I always quote other people. I don't have an opinion. But LaRouche considered her one of the most evil people of the 20th century, along with Bertrand Russell. Now, her early husband was Gregory Bateson, who led the MK-Ultra LSD sessions at Palo Alto in late 50s, early 60s. And then he ended up in the Thompson Quadrant being the resident scholar at Lindisfarne on West 20th Street and the corner of West 20th Street and 6th Avenue. See, she was part of the Macy conferences, and her husband was too, in the 40s that Kathleen Hale's book begins with, the people who created the science of cybernetics.
Gosh.
And the early Shannon Weaver model of communication.
I thought she was just tribal. I have no idea that she, was so the other end of the scale. I thought she, when you see a picture of her apartment, it's full of kind of tribal figures, things gathered from different cultures, things like that.
Well, that's what the oligarchy wanted. The oligarchy, and maybe those that could parallel world in that, they understood the pre-literate sensibility, and they wanted the world to go back to a pre-literate sensibility. That's what LaRouche called the New Dark Ages. They wanted to return to feudal social structure with the oligarchs and royalties and the 10 beasts of Europe in charge. And most of the intellectual leadership in the West was run by people favored of that view. They were into later the Gaia hypothesis, the global warming, the stopping of the growth of industry in the Third World because it just caused more pollution. They were neo-Luddite, is what the real thought controllers of the world's global meme brought in, starting with the Kennedy assassination in 1963. And then the Beatles were the first attack on the baby boomers. Then the Vietnam War was the next attack on the baby boomers. And then the whole threat of nuclear war was another thing. This was a project to make the natural brightness of the baby boomers to get distracted by fear of everything. Fear of nuclear war, fear of technology, fear of this, fear of that. Therefore, we have this neurotic generation that was planned by British intelligence, which represented oligarchic intelligence of the City of London. That was, since the world had come to a battle of the men's minds, since it was a global membrane, and memes and ideas were what controlled people, not starvation or other things like that in the First World. So it was a battle for ideas, and there was a whole agenda that LaRouche documents, a biased agenda that was favored, the kind of concepts.
So how did they deal with this, given the fact that the printing press had given education to everybody so that everybody could read and write and think for themselves?
How did they deal with that? They obsolesced the printing press. They brought in the electric environment. They had no more printing press.
But they didn't burn the books. They just brought in something more attractive and easier to do with less effort.
Yeah, people's brains were massaged by the electric effect, which is largely tactile, and the 300 or 400-year period of the Gutenberg Galaxy where people were massaged by the printing press and its products, books and newspapers and pamphlets, that constitutive basic effect did not happen anymore. So you have what, you know, popular slang would say, mob rule, totalitarianism comes in with radio, all these mass phenomena where the American individual has an identity crisis because they're built on the printing press. So the American goes running around protecting the Gutenberg Galaxy under the name democracy against electric effect called communism. That was the battle of the 20th century.